What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
What do you guys drive when you get out in your cars?
I drive a very sexy Volkswagen Tiguan.
I also drive a babe magnet. It's a 2020 Prius Prime. It goes from 0 to 60 in, yes, it can go from 0 to 60.
So I just want everybody to know my car is a 2004 Honda S2000, which it has a 2.2-liter naturally aspirated engine and the highest specific output of any mass production vehicle made before 2010.
I love that because I have no idea what any of that meant, but it sounds extremely impressive.
It's what you would get if you were a man well past his prime and dreaming. This is Impromptu from Washington Post Opinions. It's a brand new show where we take you into the conversations behind the columns. We have a lot of people here with a lot to say, so each week you'll hear different voices depending on the news of the moment. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor, and today we're talking about something that's been in the news a lot lately, electric vehicles. The Biden administration just adopted a new rule pushing car makers to produce more EVs to curb emissions. But today, we're going to talk about if America is really ready for, even wants, an EV revolution. To get into this, I'm joined by two of my colleagues. Could you two introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Megan McArdle. I'm a columnist at The Washington Post.
I'm Catherine Rampell. I am also a columnist at The Washington Post.
So the EPA last week announced that they're going to require car companies to make over two-thirds of their vehicles either electric or plug-in hybrid by 2032. So I wanted to start off by asking both of you, have you thought about buying an electric car? And if so, sort of what goes through your mind when you think about it?
I have. And what went through my mind was, I live in a row house, I street park, and I have no idea how I would park this thing without installing a charger in front of my house that would be an open invitation to strangers to charge their cars at my expense. And that's why I don't own an electric vehicle.
I have also thought about buying an EV. As I said, I have a plug-in right now. I will probably buy an EV for my next car whenever that is, but I do have some reservations about it, primarily about how difficult it can be to charge. A year or so ago, my husband and I rented a car to drive from Boston to Western Massachusetts, and you'd think Massachusetts, blue state. We were required by Hertz to bring it back 75% charged, and we spent half a day probably trying to find somewhere to charge it in Western Mass. The interstate public charging station, the stations had been ripped out because they were dysfunctional and supermarkets were really slow. So anyway, it was a bad experience then. But assuming that the infrastructure gets built out, yeah, probably I would make my next car an EV.
So clearly there's a lot that goes into this decision, you know, whether or not to go electric. And it isn't just a matter of how much carbon I'm going to help take out of the atmosphere. It's, is this thing a practical choice for me and my family, right? And it sounds to me like both of you are saying you'd sort of like to help out with the climate crisis, but it just doesn't work for you.
Well, I think There are more selfish reasons also to want an EV. It's not only about wanting to save the planet. I think on the margin, it would be cheaper and more convenient to not have to deal with filling up a gas tank all the time. You know, particularly if you have access to solar or wind energy, or if you live somewhere where otherwise utility electric is very cheap, but there are a lot of conditionals that go into that sentence.
Megan?
we live in a row house. Lots of people who could use an EV either live in a row house, live in an apartment, they street park. And if you street park, you know, I think this is a problem that I'm not sure how we're going to solve this, because even if you use public chargers, right, a lot of the savings that people estimate on electric vehicles assume that you're charging on your home electricity. They do not assume that you are charging on your more expensive public charging infrastructure. If you do that, it erases a lot of the savings. So I think that's one concern. But I don't think that's the only concern. There's obviously also the sticker price. I don't know that we're going to get down the cost curve. I hope we will, but you can't guarantee that these things are going to be cheaper.
So I've been known as an electric vehicle skeptic for a long time, and I've been watching this develop for a long time, since 2010 when the Chevy Volt first rolled out. And I got to say, every time I've guessed that they won't meet their targets, whether it's Detroit, Silicon Valley, or Washington, I've been more or less right. This is what happens when you try to meet a collective goal, climate reduction, you know, sort of one consumer choice at a time. And this is the deal that an electric vehicle offers in terms of money for overall functionality is still, like, for most use cases, not really even close to a gas-powered car, which is why they're now accumulating on the lots. I mean, I sort of feel like we're going to have to, at a certain point, stop and think about this as a country and reevaluate whether it makes more sense to sort of push hybrids as kind of an intermediate use of all those raw materials for the batteries to try to get us to lower gas reduction, as opposed to sort of going all in with this leap to EVs.
So I think that there is an intermediate stage at which hybrids make sense. And the problem is that if you can get to an electric future, it's better. Although I will say, I don't think you can get there by mandates and subsidies. And I think we're also past the point where you can even argue, well, we need these mandates and subsidies to kind of give manufacturers the time to you know, build out scale, build out capacity, do some learning, let consumers do some learning. But, you know, the fact is we do have to get to a point where consumers just want these things because they are better. I actually think we can get to that point. There's a lot to like about electric cars. It's not going to satisfy every gearhead who really gets into using a standard shift, but that's like a really actually very small part of the market. And for everyone else, I think this technology has a lot to offer, but going about it by attempting to kind of subsidize and bully your way into it really risks a political backlash. And I think you already see this where people, like, in the same way that people freaked out about when people started talking about taking away their incandescent light bulbs, you're seeing a freak out at the prospect of being forced to buy an electric car you don't want. And I think that's ultimately incredibly counterproductive.
Well, there's a lot to talk about there, but we got to take a break. We'll come back and get Catherine's view about whether or not you can force and bully people into buying electric vehicles.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
And we're back. I'm Charles Lane.
I'm Megan McArdle.
I'm Catherine Rampell.
And this is Impromptu. Catherine, it's your turn. I want to hear your take on Megan's skepticism that we can bully and subsidize our way into an EV transition.
My general view is the EV transition is going to happen. It's a question of when, not if. In the long run, the economics are on the side of electrification of lots of different things, including the vehicles that we use to get around. Just because, you know, once you build the solar array or the wind turbine, sun and wind are free. So I think I disagree slightly with Megan on whether subsidies and the like can help. I do think that there is a role for politicians to incentivize faster development, again, of the infrastructure networks, as well as adoption of these technologies. I wouldn't call it bullying per se. I think the most effective tool for accelerating adoption would be a carbon tax, but that's not going
to
happen.
I'm 100% on board with that. I would like to endorse that remark.
Okay, fair enough. I think, you know, people who are like into economics generally agree on this as the first best solution, not a politically viable one apparently, but would be the most efficient. Instead, we have in the United States, opted for carrots rather than sticks. We are paying people, rather than taxing them for doing the bad thing, we are rewarding them for doing the good thing. And I think that there could be a role for that. It is much more expensive. The main problem is we've designed those incentives very badly. Including, I think, in the Inflation Reduction Act, we've basically tried to achieve, I think, too many other kinds of objectives. When the main objective should be accelerating the green transition or whatever you want to call it, and instead we've loaded up this series of objectives with other industrial policy things like, you know, building factories here and adding jobs here, even though, frankly, there aren't going to be that many jobs that go along with any of this. So I think there are ways this could be done that are gentler than bullying.
So we have a stupid policy in this country, which is, on the one hand, our president is saying, we have to have EVs. And on the other hand, he's saying, we have to have cheap gas. You know, that is not a sensible policy. It's just a flat-out contradiction. And it is one reason of many that I'm very skeptical of this process. You know, 2 years ago, guys, the New York Times estimated that most vehicles on the road in 2050 will still be gas-powered. And to get to all EV by 2050, you'd have to absolutely ban the sale of gas vehicles by 2035, which Joe Biden isn't even doing. And in fact, what's happening is because cars are getting more expensive under all these mandates, people are holding on to their gas-powered cars much longer. The average age of a car on the road is 12 and a half years. This is like Cuba, where people are going to, you know, be driving around in their 1950 Chevys. I mean, I have seen data that show that 30% of the gasoline in this country is consumed by 10% of the people. And when you look at the geographical location of those people, it's basically the South Central United States, which makes sense. It's rural, they're big open spaces. People have to drive like 50 miles each way to get to a place where they work. And honestly, I'm extremely skeptical that you're going to get that 30% of gasoline out of the system through electrification. And so I'm wondering how you guys think that transition is going to work in a country that's not like the Netherlands, you know, where people drive 15 miles in this densely populated country, but where people just need to be able to hop in a car and go like 100 miles a day with no hassle factor and no worries.
You know, I don't think it's as big of a problem as it's made out to be. I do think it's an issue. And I think that that's an issue that Greens need to be sensitive to. You know, they'll often get super dismissive and contemptuous of people who say, I have range anxiety. And that is not the way to solve the political problem or the consumer adoption problem of range anxiety. The way you solve that is you sell those people cars with bigger batteries than most people. But also, I mean, keep in mind that 100 miles a day is actually fine. The real issue is road trips. And the problem that I worry about that I haven't seen enough talk about is that in the United States, as in most countries, although the holidays differ, we have periods of travel in which you supersaturate the highways with long distance travelers who aren't normally there, right? Like most people who are on a highway, even now, they're not going that far. But on Thanksgiving, on Memorial Day, Labor Day, you get people who are making long distance drives. And as long as charging takes half an hour, how do you actually throughput? Do you maintain charging that allows you to handle that peak? And then most of the time it's empty? Or do you not? And then how do you handle that throughput? This is not a big problem with gas stations because an average fill up takes 5 minutes. But if your average charge is taking even 15 minutes, much less half an hour, I don't know how you think about building that capacity. The capacity that would be needed to have an all-electric fleet is enormous.
Yeah, and I do think that the technology is rapidly improving. Battery technology in general, not just for cars, but you know, for storage of electricity in general, which is why, again, in the long run, I am quite optimistic about the likelihood that there will be a transition to EVs and to other cleaner, low carbon use technologies. But we're not quite there yet on all dimensions. I think Megan's point about that sort of seasonal surge is an important one that I hadn't thought as much about. We have faster charging stations than we used to, for example. You know, I don't know what that will look like a year or two from now, but presumably it will get even faster and more efficient, at least if we deploy our resources wisely.
And so how much do you guys think this transition depends on who is in the White House?
A lot, right? I mean, Republicans are already promising that as soon as Trump gets elected, they're going to roll this back. You know, Trump's not always very competent at rolling back the stuff that people think he's going to roll back. But I do think that, you know, Republicans are much more hostile to this, in part because they have more constituents for whom this is a real worry. What we need to be focusing on, right? The government could operate a network of charging stations that was comprehensive and nationwide. And it would annoy people and it would cost some amount of money every year, but it wouldn't be something that like Trump would come in targeting. On the other hand, mandating that everyone have an electric, that half of all cars being sold by 2032 are going to be electric vehicles, that's going to annoy a lot of people who don't want to buy an electric vehicle right now. Maybe they will in 2032. And so for me, I think the way you approach this is by trying to build the stuff that is necessary to overcome anxiety. Figuring out how to get apartment garages, having more chargers, figuring out how to price public charging for people who live in places where it's not possible to charge privately. I think those are the hurdles that the government should be working on resolving rather than trying to kind of jumpstart this by saying to automakers that you have to do this.
Catherine, you've heard from both sides, so to speak. What have you taken away from this conversation?
I think that political leadership does matter. And my concern with either party running the show is that Republicans may want to slow down the transition. Democrats may want to speed it up, but don't know how. And that they have gotten in their own way by basically cluttering up what could be well-designed programs to invest in R&D, to create the incentives to build more cleaner vehicles and in a way that is appealing to consumers. But they have cluttered up all of those objectives with lots of ancillary objectives. Like even in the example of the charging stations, well, we didn't talk about this, but the IRA had subsidies, has tax credits for siting charging stations, EV charging stations, but they have to be sited either in non-urban areas or in low-income census tracts. And it's like, well, who buys new cars? you know, it is generally higher-income people who are buying the new cars and who may be deciding between an EV and a traditional combustion engine. So why are we, I understand for equity purposes, it sounds good to put these charging stations in low-income neighborhoods, but if those are not the, if you're making it less attractive for the people who are considering buying a new car to buy an EV, because you're not putting the charging station near them, that undercuts your whole objective.
Catherine Rampell, Megan McArdle, thank you both for joining me for an episode of Impromptu.
Thanks Chuck.
This episode was produced by Hadley Robinson, edited by Damir Marusik, Chris Solentrop and Allison Michaels, and mixed by Emma Munger. Chris Rukan designed our art. Special thanks to Millie Mitra, Nick Safin, Renita Jablonski, and David Shipley. Find Impromptu wherever you get your podcasts. And we're just getting started, so let us know what you think of the show. If you like this episode, make sure to follow us and leave us a review.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.